Welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa, I'm your host, and in today's episode, I'm speaking with weight loss registered dietitian Caroline Piper. Caroline and I speak about tips for eating out, why staple meals are super helpful, and lifestyle practices for weight loss. I hope you enjoy the episode, and please, if you like the show, subscribe and give us a rating or take a screenshot and share the episode on your social media. Thank you so much, and as always, if you want personalized help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we are your go-to coaches. Just hit the contact link in the show notes for more details. Now onto my conversation with Caroline. Caroline Piper, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited.
It is absolutely my pleasure. I'm really, really excited to talk about all things weight loss, nutrition, etc. today. But to start us off with, I would love to hear from you. What is the number one thing you're excited for our listeners to learn from this conversation today?
Yeah, really, really good question. I would say that eating healthier doesn't have to be this huge thing that we think sometimes. I think people get really intimidated by changing up their diet, and it doesn't have to be this big plan, you know, that has to be perfect. That you can take things off in bite-sized pieces and slowly incorporate healthier, you know, eating decisions one at a time. So I think that's a wonderful message.
Yes, because it can sometimes seem so daunting, so overwhelming if we think we have to do all the things. And honestly, I've had people come to us and saying like, Lisa, I don't even know what to drink anymore, because should it be like alkaline water? Do I need to have this water? Like, do I need to change every single faucet in my house? Or like, where do I even start? I don't even know what to eat anymore. So no, I think this is a wonderful message. And we're obviously going to pick that a little bit apart in the sense of simplicity. I would love to hear get us going as well. How did you get, or how come that you wanted to become a weight loss registered dietitian?
Yeah, really good question. So I started out in school as I wanted to be a PA. So I knew I wanted to be in the medical field somehow. I thought it was really fascinating and I wanted to help people. I come from some of my family is in the medical field. So I knew I wanted to end up in that area. But then when I went to college, I would say I wanted to lose weight not in a healthy way. I just wanted to lose weight in general. And then I quickly discovered that I was doing it in a really unhealthy way. I went, you know, the classic eat as little calories as possible. I'll try to work out all the time. And it worked. I mean, I'll tell people that, I'll be totally transparent that it worked. But after, you know, 6 months, I looked great. I didn't feel great though. Like it did not, I had a really bad relationship with food. I was scared to eat anything that we would consider fun foods, right? So fries, cake, any of that fun stuff. I was like, no, I can't go near that. You know, that equals weight gain. And so thankfully I took a nutrition course as an elective, and it changed everything for me. I think the biggest thing was I saw food as fuel, I would say. And I started to learn more about, you know, how can carbs be good? How can fat be good? You know, all these things that we eat, our body can take really good things from them. And so that completely flipped the script for me. And I didn't even know what dietetics was. I had never heard of that before. I'd never heard of a dietitian. I had only heard of a nutritionist. And so thankfully the school that I was at had a whole dietitian program. So I was a junior in college, which is really late to change your major, but thankfully I had a bunch of the prerequisites already. So I changed my major, added a year so on of school. And then when I did that, I quickly found out that you have to get your master's too. So it was a very interesting, but I was so determined. I was like, I don't care. Give me the school. Give me the internship. I'll do it. I want to help people. I always tell people, I want to help people do the opposite of what I did. And I know a lot of people, when they try to lose weight, they kind of fall into some of the trendy diets and stuff that I did. But if I can help someone, you know, flip that their path to, or not go down that road that I went down, you know, that's my whole goal with my practice. So I did all the schooling and everything to be a dietitian, and then here we are. So
that's awesome. I love it. And again, from personal struggles usually come the best lessons, and we make the best teachers as well. So great, and great mission as well, just wanting to pass that on and show others that it doesn't have to be this restrictive, and on the contrary, that's not sustainable sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so if someone comes to you and they are saying exactly what we were talking about earlier, like they might be making some mistakes that you have been doing, how do you shatter their pre-existing beliefs in the sense of potentially someone being terrified of carbs or just in general eating more? Because I've been there too, where it's like you're just so terrified of even including, I don't know, a slice of bread, and you're like, oh my God, this is gonna make me fat, just inherently. So where do you start?
Really good question. I think one, just validating, how people are feeling is always the first thing, because I totally understand it's overwhelming. You have, especially with social media, I always tell people there's pros and cons to social media, because there's things like this where you get access to things, that, people didn't have before. There's so much amazing information. There's so many helpful people online, but that comes the bad with that too, right? It's very, there's so much, too much information. You're like, what diet do I pick? So I usually start with just, telling them, like, I understand where you're coming from, like, let's figure out what we can do for you. And then usually I'll go into, okay, let's go through what worked and what didn't work. So if there's parts of, a lot of people that's like, oh, when I ate more protein, I felt great. So it's like, okay, let's take that, right? And then they'll say, well, when I only ate one meal a day, I was starving and, and hangry, and it didn't work at all, right? So we'll take those components and we'll build more of a plan. I always tell people too, like, when you meet with one person, you kind of get tunnel vision in a good way, where you can filter out all the, the other noise of what's going on online, and from things that you get from family and other people too. And so it helps. I'm like, we're going to create a plan just for you. We're going to take the parts and pieces that maybe worked and didn't work and change, and then we'll create this very personalized plan. That way you don't even have to worry about the other stuff. If you don't want to follow all these people on social media, then, by all means, don't worry about that. So I think, and then starting just from the basics, maybe you pick a couple things here and there. And some people will push back on that because they want to change their whole life, right? They want to change their whole health. And I love that. I always say that's a great long-term goal. So, we'll shelf that. We'll keep that there. But let's start with, what can we do the first couple weeks? And that way it feels a lot more sustainable and they don't feel like they want to quit. Because the most important thing, right, is we can all get these crazy diets, but if you don't stick to it, then there's really no purpose in that. So if you can create a couple goals that you can stick to, and in a month you're like, okay, I feel great, I did that, now what's next? That's kind of how I do things.
Yeah, and that builds self-confidence as well in your
Exactly.
abilities to actually carry through. Because I don't know about you, Caroline, but I've worked with or many people that come to us also. They even though they say they want change and they're ready for weight loss and so on, deep down they have that sort of sabotaging, limiting belief where it's like, well, this is just another diet and I'm probably going to fail anyway, because in the past they have failed because they did. It was so unsustainable to continue to stay on 1200 or calories or, whatever. So yeah, I totally love what you said about just building that confidence there through sustainability. And yeah, so I guess let's continue that. You've started with them, you have spoken with them, and now if someone says to you, well, okay, give me some simple meal ideas, or give me, how do I create my meals from this now? What are some suggestions that you have for people?
So usually I do things a little bit backwards than some other practitioners and coaches might do. I know a lot of people, when they get on the calls, they think, okay, give me the meal plan. Like, that's what they want. And some people that absolutely works for. I would say that's not the majority of my clients, just based on how I do things. So a lot of the times I'll have them track what they're doing from the get-go. And so instead of giving them something, I kind of have them give me something, right? And I see what they're doing, and then I make tweaks to that. So I might have this idea of, for a weight loss client, the ideal, like, checklist, protein and vegetables and all these things. But I make tweaks based off of what they do, because that's going back to the, things being realistic and sustainable. That That works 10 million times better most of the time than giving them something. You know, like I said, some people I'll give them some tips and tweaks. I don't want them to feel like they're going home, you know, empty-handed. But that tends to work a lot better because I'll say, okay, great. I'm glad that you had, you know, a bagel for breakfast. However, you know, those carbs are great, but let's add a protein. So I build off of that because, like you were saying, that's a lot more encouraging and they don't feel like they're doing something quote unquote wrong. And they're able to stick to it because then they're like, great, I'm glad I had a good carb. Like, let's go from that, right? So that's kind of how I start with their food. And then as they get comfortable with that, and you know, they trust me too, because you know, a lot of people on calls, they're afraid I'm going to sit there and tell them all the things that they're doing wrong and kind of bark at them. So once we build a good rapport too, and they see I'm not there to be the food police, then I'll give them a little bit more tweaks. But usually, you know, we'll kind of start with basics like getting your veggies in, your protein, all the things that people, I would say a lot of people know to do, but they just kind of need some of that accountability. I always tell my new clients that I would say 85% of what I do is accountability, and then the other 15% is the education. So we usually start with the education, and then we'll really just go to accountability so they have someone to check in with. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, totally. And there
Okay.
are several things I love about that. So we go about it in a similar way in the sense of quote unquote, building on what we already see what the person eats, because
Yes.
it also tells you what they like do they prefer higher fats or something salty, or do they
Yeah.
prefer something sweet? And so, you know, if you see in someone's food log, okay, they like oats for breakfast, but there again is no protein in there. Can we mix protein powder in there and maybe
Exactly.
skip the sugar or whatever that they're adding to it,
Yes.
and just tweaking it that way, and also again giving people the win of like, okay, it's not so quote unquote terrible what I'm already doing, but we're just adjusting the quantities and making sure that through the right macro distribution, we're already seeing changes in regards
Yeah.
to satiation, in regards to blood sugar regulation, and all of these other things. So I think
Yes,
that's really,
exactly.
really great. And
Yeah.
when I was obviously researching a little bit for the show and to
Yeah.
prepare for the content, I looked through your Instagram and so as well. And I love what you're sharing there and how you're also
Thanks.
sharing what you're eating. And one thing that you spoke about was staple meals and why it's good to have staple meals. And I think that's a really important point because I often hear, how much variety do I really need? I only like these two types of vegetables. Is that okay? Or then
Yeah.
other people that are just like all over the place, something different every single day, and they're really having a hard time tracking, or, you know, it might be 2,500 calories one day and the next day 1,500, and it's just like all over the place. So, yeah,
Yeah.
please talk to us a little bit about why you believe staple meals are important.
Yeah, that's a really good question and thing to bring up. I think because of, you know, with working with weight loss a lot, you obviously have to be in a calorie deficit. And things like tracking and calories can be, whether you're tracking just food items or calories or macros too, can be really overwhelming. You know, there's a lot of things to track every single day. And a lot of what I'm trying to do is reduce burnout, you know, because that's how you become successful and lose the weight if you can stick to it. And so, and I'm here, I always tell clients too, I'm here for the long haul. I'm not interested in quick fixes because that doesn't help you at all. You know, losing weight really quickly, as we know now, is not good for us. And so, with the staple meals, if you can make a meal and you can track it one time, you do all the hard stuff first, right? You track all the calories and the macros, whatever, you know, you're aiming for, and then you just can repeat it. And so that helps you stay on track. It makes your weeks less overwhelming, especially for our busy people like moms. I always use that example for moms, you know. And so if you can get those meals and keep them in your back pocket, I always tell people, you know, put it in either print it out old school or, you know, put it in the notes of your phone and give yourself enough variety that you don't get sick of it. 'Cause another thing, right, that leads to burnout. So give yourself, whether it's 5 or 10 meals that you can create basically this list that you can repeat, you know, whether it's every week or every other week and go back and forth. That's really what's going to keep you on track because it's going to make it really sustainable and easy. Then you just go to the grocery store or you order online and you have, you know, the 10 things that you get, and it makes those meals just super, super easy. And it's good to have I always tell people fresh meals that you can make as well as frozen. I am such a big fan of frozen staples like frozen meatballs, turkey burgers, things like that. Because as we all know, you know, you get done from a long day of work or Maybe it's a long weekend, whatever it is, and sometimes the last thing that we want to do is cook a healthy meal, and it's easier to go get fast food. And not that you can't, be successful with some of those things, but what we do majority of the time is how we get results, right? So if you can have super easy frozen meals, whether it's, like I said, meatballs and some, maybe it's like frozen broccoli and then some frozen rice, that gives you a really easy staple meal that you can whip up in 20 minutes. It probably would take you just as long to go get the fast food, if not longer, but you're able to make that meal and you're able to stay on track, which then again breeds that motivation. So,
Yeah,
yeah, staple
very,
meals are
very
my
cool.
favorite.
And I think a lot of people overestimate how much variety they
Yes.
actually need. So it's often when you're so used to just eating intuitively, which there's, a place for it, but I always say intuitive
Yeah.
eating also needs to be learned, right? And
Yes, exactly.
we need to actually teach our taste buds what to crave. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen naturally with our normal Western diet.
Yeah.
But once we have taught ourselves how to intuitively eat, it's absolutely a good strategy for maintenance
Yes.
anyway, not for weight loss. But in any
Yeah.
case, I do think, even just with mixing out or switching in and out your protein flavors, a different kind of fruit, you might vary between three types of berries or between berries and apples or whatever. That can
Yes.
help you already feel like you have some variety, or even just, okay, I'm gonna keep that chicken and just switching out different kinds of grains. 1 week I might have some rice, another week I might have quinoa, and
Yeah.
yeah, I also think low calorie condiments and various herbs and spices can really change up a meal, maybe not completely, but give you a very different feeling. So if you're adding,
Yeah.
let's say, a sriracha sauce and maybe some paprika seasoning, it might taste very different than if you add soy sauce and coriander
Yeah.
to the exact same meal, and you're getting a different impression. So I think sometimes we're used to overcomplicating it
Yes.
if we're coming from a place of, I need to have a proper recipe of like this lasagna or this whatever stew or so. Like, yes, those are guidelines, but generally speaking, if we're keeping it simple to like 3 to 5 ingredients and kind of varying that way a little bit, I think that can be a good strategy. And I guess, speaking of strategies, you already mentioned the strategy of like freezing your meals, or I also using canned foods or frozen vegetables, and some things can be great to have at hand as well. Like, just if you have a chest freezer, so like keep that stocked of keep your pantry stocked with some, I don't know, chopped tomatoes and corn and
Yeah.
things like that. That can be really helpful. But yet, talking about eating out, I think that sometimes people have a hard time to. Like, you might have 50 things on the menu, and like, where do I even start? What are some helpful tips that you give your clients at hand when it comes to eating out in general? It can be for
Yes.
breakfast, coffee, whatever.
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I think, as you probably teach too, most of the time we want to eat from home just because we get more control over our meals, right? But we also want to live our life and have fun. And some people just can't do that, whether it's travel or, access to things. So usually the rule of thumb I give people is kind of pick one of each macronutrient. So protein, always find your protein, because as we know, that's the most satiating, helps with blood sugar balance, helps you stay in a calorie deficit. So pick your protein. If you're out to a restaurant, it doesn't really matter what it is. I tell people you want a little flexibility. So if it's fried chicken, get the fried chicken, or it's a burger, get the burger, but then pick one carb. So I always use like a burger and fries meal as an example. So the burger would be your protein, and then pick your carbs. So whether it's the bun or the fries, so pick one. Usually I'm a fry person. I will always pick the fries no matter what. So I don't really care about a bun. I'm like, I can get bread anytime. So I'll pick the burger patty, the fries, and then add a vegetable. I think sometimes we're afraid to ask for veggies sometimes. And at the end of the day, the worst that the restaurant can say is no. So whether they have a side of veggies or you ask them, to give you one, don't be afraid to be that person that eats a vegetable or asks for the side salad or whatever it is. I think sometimes we feel embarrassed to ask for the healthy food, but at the end of the day, it's your health, right? You got to prioritize that. So, add a side veggie if you can. So that kind of creates like an easy rule of thumb. A lot of the times the fat is built in there, whether it's the sauce or the oils, just because I always tell clients too, The restaurant doesn't care about low calories. At least most don't. They want it to taste good. That's how they make money. At the end of the day, it's a business. They got to keep their lights on. So they will put a lot of butters and oils and things in there for it to taste good. So don't worry about necessarily about adding that healthy fat in there because the fats will naturally be in there. So that's kind of gives you your burger patty, your fries, or the carbs, and then the veggies. And sometimes I'll have people push back and they're like, "But what if I want the fries and the bun?" And that's fine. These are just tips to help with fat loss, right? So every once in a while, I'll eat the bun and the fries, right? But this is just like the rule of thumb. If you go out to a restaurant, a couple times a week, what can you do to stay on track but still enjoy that food? So, good question.
Yeah, no, I like that with regards to the balance of one or the other. I do also say that often to my clients when they're like, "Should I have des can I have dessert and wine?" And I'm like, "Think of yourself as your child and talk to yourself like your child. If your child said to you, 'Can I have the chocolate and the gummy bears?' you would either say you can have half of each, or you would say you can ha pick one or the other." And
I
if you
like
have
that.
that sort of conversation with yourself, again, especially to your point of if that's something you do regularly, like twice a week, I would really advise that. If it's something like once a year, your birthday or your 20th wedding anniversary, like by all means, geez, like allow yourself something. But it is the things that we do on a regular basis. And so I think if we think of ourselves, okay, we're going to reason here a little bit. I want the alcohol. I'm going to skip the dessert, or I'm going to share the dessert and only, have like one glass as opposed to two glasses of wine. I think that also helps us practice moderation. And that was actually going to be another question for you. If someone does say to you, if I have that food, I have to have it all, or I can't stop if I have this and that. I don't know if you come across that, but I very much work with a lot of people that have that sort of all or nothing mindset. And again, I used to be there as well. It was like, okay, today is
100%.
my cheat day. I'm going to have everything because if I start having that, I need to have it all. So, what are some of your tips or strategies how you work with people to kind of move away from that?
Really good question. So I kind of and kind of, I liked what you were saying about intuitive eating too, because I feel like that's been, the thing that people have been talking about recently. And so I like what you said about that because it goes two different ways. So I'll give you two different scenarios. So with weight loss per se, you need to follow guidelines, right? So if you have something in the house and you brownies are really hard for you, then don't buy brownies right now. And I know that can sound really diet culture, but I don't mean it like that, right? Because if it's something that you just don't have self-control over, then stop putting yourself in that position. It's not saying that you can't have them or you can't go out and get them, right? You're kind of putting that barrier in there. I don't know if you've probably read the book Atomic Habits by James
Love
Clear.
it. Yes.
Absolutely love that book. It's kind of how I build my whole practice. But you're putting a barrier, you're adding a barrier in, so that ways it creates, you have to get in your car and go out and get the brownie. So that's usually my first step, is if it's something that you don't have a lot of control over, then just don't keep it in your house right now. Eventually we can get there, but right now it may not be good. So you're giving yourself some guidelines. I think you've probably seen some of this before, but people talk in the intuitive eating space. It's like we should live life without restriction. And I think that gets carried away a little bit because we do need some restriction. We're in the age of DoorDash and fast food. Like, we can have so much really calorically dense, not super nutritious food at our fingertips. And so unfortunately, we do have to create some guidelines for ourselves, because if you haven't learned some of that moderation or that self-control, it's really, really hard. And I like to tell people that, because sometimes people are so hard on themselves. And yes, I get it. Like, you want to have that self-accountability, but at the same time too, we're just in the age of it being everywhere. So sometimes it's, creating those barriers for yourself, but not in a negative way, more so in a positive. This is to help you right now. And like I said, we can eventually get to that place where you might be able to keep it in the house. And hopefully that's the end all be all goal, right? Is that you can buy it, or maybe you don't even want to buy it anymore. Maybe you get to the place where you're like, I don't need some of these sweets because I can go out and get it. So that's kind of one area that I start with some people if they have a really hard time with those foods. The other place I would say would be, and some clients this works really well with, if they have, a sweet tooth, for example, using the brownies, I might say have, and it's working on the relationship with the sweets, I might say have a small little bite-sized brownie after lunch and dinner, so then you know that it's coming. You don't create this whole I can never have it, or if I have it, I have to have all of it. You know, I have to have the tub. So it's kind of, I hate to say this because it's not, I'm not a therapist, but it's like exposure therapy kind of, you know, you're having it. And so you kind of break this like off limits, you know, mindset with it. And that works really, really well for some clients because then they'll get to the point where like, I don't even need the brownie today. Like, in fact, I'm actually kind of sick of the brownies because I've been having so many of them, you know? So those are two different scenarios. So I kind of depend on the person and maybe what their personality or, you know, they're just kind of where their mindset is at. So I use some, and sometimes it's we use both of those with the same person. It's just what time, you know, where are they at in their journey? So.
Yeah, no, I l love it. And yeah, totally practicing the same strategy with our clients as well. Like, I do think if you get away from that, I'm not allowed that, or
Yes.
I can never have that, and you're like, well, okay, this is a daily thing. It loses its appeal in a way. And
Yeah.
yeah, it's a wonderful place when you do get there with a client. And to the point of intuitive eating again, add to the availability and the high calories, also we're
Yeah.
highly stressed. So, you know,
Yes.
what are we quote unquote craving in that moment? It is those higher calorie foods. We're not like, when we're super stressed, it's not like, oh, I really, really crave that iceberg lettuce right there. Like, this is a sentence no one has ever said before, right? So
Yeah, absolutely.
it's something that is giving us that quick dopamine hit and something sugary. So
Yeah.
how do you, your body is going to give you that intuition of, I want the brownie, not I want the, again, nothing wrong with the brownie, but that makes it difficult. And I think by definition, like, some people expect to be able to lose weight with intuitive eating, not realizing that your intuition is never going to tell you to eat less than what your body needs.
Yes.
But your body is always going to tell you, I want as much as I
More.
need or more. And we usually want more because we are stressed, or it is very highly palatable and tastes good. So unless you want to maintain your weight or possibly even gain weight, that's when intuitive eating comes in. But if you are just if you're wanting to lose weight, that by definition is not intuitive eating, because if you're hungry, your intuition is gonna, or if you're in a calorie deficit, you're gonna be hungry, and that means you want to eat. But yeah, so I think that's a
Absolutely.
very misunderstood point there. But once we have taught our body, okay, let's crave how to crave vegetables, how to crave protein, because many people that you and I probably work with, they are on very low protein diets initially, and they're like, I don't even like chicken that much, or I don't know. So it takes a while for those taste buds to actually change. And I think that's also another wonderful moment when you get that first message from your client saying like, oh, I actually really cra I came back from vacation where it was a buffet, and I really craved just my broccoli or
Oh,
whatever that
yeah, or a
I normally have.
steak. I want a
Yeah,
steak.
exactly. No, that's honestly a wonderful moment. But yeah, I would love to move just a little bit from the pure nutritional side also into other lifestyle routines and practices that you encourage your clients to practice, and that maybe you practice yourself also. Is there something where you're like, outside of just the pure meal aspect or food aspect, that you work with your clients on? So yeah.
I joke with my clients sometimes too. I'm a dietitian, but I'm also kind of a health coach because I think it all fits together. You know, if your sleep's not in check, your cravings can be out of control, which then it's hard to work out, you know, when you're not eating super nutritious foods. So it's all a cycle, and there's pieces of the cycle that all matter. So I work with people on all of those things. But I think we kind of touched on this with the access to food though too, is we don't have to move much right now. I don't say that to moms because they move a lot. You know, most moms are on the feet a lot, especially with little ones. But we have work from home jobs. You know, we don't have to walk anywhere. You know, we really don't have to move a ton with DoorDash, for example. So movement is a really big thing, you know, as you probably teach and preach as well. But I think just like the day gym, going to the gym is really important. And that's another avenue I'll kind of go down. But just like your day-to-day movement, getting up throughout the day, you know, sitting for 8 hours on end or 8+ hours is so not good for us, you know, not good for our joints, not good for our mental health. Just so many things go into that. So I'm really big on steps, whether it's, you know, you want to walk for half an hour, you know, here and there, whether someone wants to track steps or step track minutes. I'm really, really big on just moving your body. And that's usually where I start. You know, if someone I meet with who is not doing anything, I don't send them to the gym immediately. A lot of the times it's just getting up. You know, maybe it's going on a 10-minute walk. We start with that every single day, you know, in the morning or in the evening, wherever they can fit it in their day. So usually I'll start there and then I'll build off of that. But steps is a really, really big one just for that day-to-day movement and that, you know, kind of piece of our metabolism. 'Cause like I said, I think the gym is really important, but at the same time too, you know, if you're not moving all day, the 30 minutes of the gym, while it's really good for your heart, you know, and stress and things like that, it's not helping you as much as you would think. You know, what we do during the day is very important as well. So that's a big, big area that I work on with people is just the movement and then sleep. And sleep is a really hard one because I would say it's probably the first to go for a lot of people. You know, it's staying up late and then having to get up and go to work. But we just recover so much with our sleep and we really, really need it. It plays a big role in our metabolism, our mental health. So many different things. And so I'm really kind of, my clients probably hate me for that, but I'm really on them about sleep because it's just so important. And I think, like I said, it's the first thing that people will cut out because it's easy, you know. You have to get up and go to work every day, you know, to pay your bills, but you don't necessarily, no one's usually, except for me, no one's on you about how much sleep you get. So it's and just sleep habits, you know, whether it's falling asleep to the TV or on your phone, you know, we know now that those things aren't super good for us, as well as alcohol, you know, affecting our REM sleep. That's been a really big one recently that I think has been hard for a lot of people because, you know, alcohol is fun and it's very social, but we're just finding so much information about how just it's just not great for our sleep, unfortunately. So I would say the walking and the sleep are two other things. I mean, there's a lot, right? We could touch on a lot of things, but those are usually like sleep, movement, and eating are kind of the main three pillars I start with.
Love it. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm a huge advocate for steps as well, especially post meal. I think very, very helpful for blood sugar
Yes,
regulation as well.
absolutely.
And really, underestimated how good that also is for our mental health. And just that movement, I always say, like, if someone's feeling kind of down or sort of like having a depressed moment or so, going for a walk, honestly, I have never felt worse after a walk.
Exactly. Unless you're sick, yeah.
The worst thing that could happen is that you still feel the same, but even that hasn't usually come back, and you at least have a bit more energy or so to do things. So yeah, I love the step aspect and the sleep aspect as well, for sure. It's so easy to skip that. And again, like, cutting it short is having huge effects on our hormones as well. And of course, with that, our metabolism regulation. And therefore, we're probably gonna tend to crave more of those more calorically dense foods because leptin and ghrelin are misregulated and so on. So really, it's a cascade that just sort of goes down from there. And I often come across people that say, "Well, I've always slept 5 to 6 hours and I'm fine. Like, that's just, my body does well with that." I'm like, "Yeah, no, it's probably because you don't know how good you could feel on 7 or 8 hours." That's the point, really. And to the point of alcohol as well, aside from it affecting the sleep and so on, it's basically empty calories, and actually worse than that. I mean, we're gonna feel, if you're in a weight loss phase and let's say 2, 3 drinks or so are coming from alcohol, those are calories that are not satiating for you. So you're gonna be even hungrier. And if you're a small female and you only have, I don't know, 1400 calories or whatever, because you're in a dieting phase, and 600 of those come from alcohol, that gives you like 800 calories to eat. That is not a whole heck of a lot, right? So that just makes me a little bit sad sometimes, or in my opinion, would be an easy thing to fix, to feel a lot more satiated and energized, because you're also getting more micronutrients if those 600 calories came from actual food. But yeah, I'm
100%.
really curious though about your sort of daily routine as well. I'd love to hear what an average day looks like for you, and kind of also going into if you have a morning routine, an evening bedtime routine, that sort of stuff.
Really good question. So I live in Southern California, so I'm blessed with the nice weather, I would say most times of the year. We had the fires earlier this year, which was a little rough, but so I really try to get out at least twice a day, which I know is not, no, not everybody can do that. So I definitely, appreciate that, and I try not to take that for granted. So usually try to do a walk in the morning and in the afternoon. I go for the stereotypical 10,000 steps. I know there's some talk about it, being just like a random number. And there's not, this all these health effects from there's no like 10,000 isn't, there's no special, I don't know what I'm trying to say, like
Yeah,
effect from 10,000,
no,
right?
I totally get it. But I'm with you. I feel like it's a number that's like challenging, but it's not too hard to achieve. Like even what I tried for 12,000 for a little while at some point, I was like, that was hard. And like 7 or 8,000 by now is like basically easy. So yeah, I'm with you on
Exactly. Yeah.
that.
So I like what you were saying too, is it feels like it's enough of a challenge, but then I also feel good off of it. When I hit a day, and not just because I hit the number, but because I actually moved my body, when I find when I move it that much, I feel great. I actually just did a 15,000 step challenge with myself because I wanted to see if I could do it. It was really stinking
I
hard.
believe that,
I'm up
yes.
at 10 p.m. on my walking pad and I'm like, yeah, this probably isn't the most sustainable, but I just wanted to do it to see if I could do it. And just so I could, talk about, things being sustainable and unsustainable and things like that. So I will not be doing 15,000 steps every single day, but it's fun to, hit things like that every once in a while. So I really try to do that. I am the biggest, if you'll see this from my page too, I don't know that I've talked about it a ton recently, but I'm the biggest breakfast advocate. Not a fan of skipping breakfast, for most women too, just for our hormones' sake. If you want to do the intermittent fasting, that's fine. I usually just say like move your window, more so to the morning. So I always have, a big satiating breakfast. Try to hit around 30 grams of protein with at least a fruit or a veggie. Veggies can be kind of hard to hit in the morning if you're, doing something on the sweeter side, but always have breakfast. I don't meal prep the same meals every single day, but I batch prep. I don't know if you ever do anything like that where I batch prep the meats and then I kind of change up the meals throughout the day or the week, because that's to me more fun than having the same thing every single day.
Right.
I'm a
One of
creature
the
of habit,
luxuries of working
but
from home as well.
yeah,
Like, yeah.
exactly. But I try to do that even though I work from home. I still try to batch prep because it's just setting myself up for success, right? When I have meetings after meetings after meetings, the last thing I want to do is, make this whole meal. So I still try to meal prep almost like I would, or batch prep like I would be taking it to the office in a way, just to kind of keep myself on a good path. But I'm trying to think what else. I try to have at least, I have a Stanley, like a 30 ounce Stanley. So I try to have three of those a day. That hits me around, 90 ounces of water. I'll take some electrolytes if I need them. I don't think it needs to be an everyday sort of thing. I'm just kind of listing off the things that I
Oh, I
do.
love it. That's exactly what
I try to stop caffeine after around 10 a.m. because the half-life of caffeine, you probably know this, but is quite longer than most people think. And so I realize if I take it too late in the day, it messes with my sleep. And not that I have an issue with like falling asleep per se, I can just tell I'm not super well rested in the morning. So I really try to have a hard cutoff with caffeine. Not every single day, but for the most part. I would say I'm very big on not staying up super late. My husband and we go to bed pretty early. We try to hit around 9 p.m. is when we go to bed. We just feel better when we do that, and we're huge morning people. So I would like to be up, if I can by 6 a.m. Just because I'm more productive that way. But I've been big on magnesium. So I do like magnesium on my feet and my legs. Helps with sleep, muscle recovery, anxiety, things like that. So I'm trying to think of anything else. Oh, I am the biggest fan of the Kindle and reading before bed. So I really try to get off my phone at least an hour before bed, and I always read every single night like clockwork. I take it on vacation, anywhere I go, I read on my Kindle. So that way, stay away from the blue lights and the scrolling, because I have found that it makes my anxiety worse. So I always read before bed. It helps me kind of wind down. I'm a big fan. I like reading for education purposes and, science and things like that, but I'm a big fan of like just nonfiction, just stuff to kind of, take my brain off of work and things like that. So I read every night, but I think
That's
that's
a lovely way
about
to
it.
wind down. And yeah, I'm like you. I think limiting blue light exposure before going to bed, and not just the blue light exposure, but also if you're scrolling, it just keeps your brain thinking, and it keeps, you might see something upsetting, or you might see someone who's doing better than you, and then the comparison starts again, and you're like, oh no, I'm not enough. I should have done more today, and like the thing just continues. So no, I love what you're saying there. And in regards to the steps as well, I mean that's a wonderful practice of trying get outside also for the sense of daylight, setting your circadian rhythm, and thankfully for most people listening, it is we are going into nicer weather, so hopefully that's a bit of an encouragement for people to make the effort to go outside more. And yeah, so to kind of round us off here, I would love to know if you have, I don't know, three things or so that like mistakes that you see your clients or people just make in general with regards to their nutrition, and maybe how it's like some simple ways to fix that potentially.
I think that's a really good question. I would say I kind of hinted at this earlier, but maybe pick three different things you can do in, movement, what did I say? Food, and then any sort of just like healthy habits. So whether it's, set a step goal for yourself, maybe try something different with your food, whether you're adding in more protein, adding in more veggies. So kind of in those three different areas, pick one thing. 'Cause I think a lot of the times we see a diet, we try to, change everything that we're doing. So if you can pick, one thing in each of those three different areas, I would say start with that. It's a little less overwhelming. If you're not in a place to meet with someone, whether it's a coach or dietitian, find something like that, I think is a really good place to start. Where was I going with that? Oh geez, sorry, I just lost my
No, you're fine. Absolutely. I mean, that's basically three tips in one already, because I was saying like some mistakes that you see, but yeah, I think the
Oh
mistake
yeah.
is often that just people do way too much, or
Yes.
maybe overall not even focused enough. So if we have one focus for each one of those areas and try to stick with that for a week or two, and then building on that, I think that's really, really great. So
Yeah, I would say. And going off of what you just said too, is give it, I tell people to give it a month because I think a lot of the times we don't give it enough time and then we change it up and we might have been right on the cusp of change and we change it up too quickly, right? A lot of the times we'll do that when I set a calorie goal with someone, the first week we'll get on the next call and they're like, I haven't lost any weight. Like, well, wait a second. You got to give it your body. It's a whole process. It's not like your body just uses that fat really quickly. It's on a micro level. So it takes time to see that. And you may be losing weight and it's so small, we just don't see it on the scale quite yet, because our weight changes all the time too. So I like what you said about, giving it time. So I tell people a month, which I know is a long time, but if you change things in each of those places, you should see some results after a month, whether it might not be on the scale, but it might be energy-wise, sleep-wise, mental health-wise. So look at, and that's probably my third point too, is look at different forms of progress. I know a lot of people want to lose weight and that's a great goal, but you gotta see other things. You gotta look at other forms of progress too, because at the end of the day, I care about their weight loss, but I also care about their long-term health. So, reducing chronic disease risks as well, as increasing muscle mass, like all those things, the long-term health things too. So I would say finding other metrics of progress is another really big one.
Awesome. I love it. Well, thank you so much, Caroline. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and thank you for sharing your wisdom and your tips with us. I will obviously make sure to link all your social handles in the show notes so people
Perfect.
can go and check out your content or maybe even work with you. And I thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Caroline. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow on Instagram or YouTube. And remember, if you want personalized help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we'd love to guide you. One more thing before you go, if you are looking for premium supplements, our partner, Fat Muscle Project, has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more, and feel free to use our code NCL for your chance to win a $250 gift card. Thank you for listening.